Radio Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. Exciting day. Did you guys just see the breaking news?
Ladies and gentlemen,
Not yet, Almost though. And that's the theme of today's show. Ladies and gentlemen, we got, okay. So I'm gonna get to that in a second. Later in the program, we do have a fight among progressives. What's new? The establishment versus Bernie Sanders. Who's establishment backing? Which senator there are they going with? Well, I'll tell you. And the war against the Sanders supporters has begun, and they have their theme, and that theme will enrage you. And Trump's new approval numbers are in, and it is a disaster.
Ladies and gentlemen,
not yet. Okay, but let's get to it. It's too big a news to hold to another segment. Let's do it. Let's do it right now. Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury on the Russia investigation.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got it.
No, not yet. Not yet. Hold. Okay, but we are close. So this is, as Joe Biden would say, this is a big effing deal. So the grand jury will be in Washington, and watch out. We've got a report from Wall Street Journal. Let me get right to it. Special Counsel Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury in Washington to investigate Russia's interference in the 2016 elections, a sign that his inquiry is growing in intensity and entering a new phase. So let's just say the obvious here. They're not wrapping this thing up. It's not like they looked around. They're like, no, there's no there there. This is a nothing burger. No, we're not going to waste a lot of time and effort here. We're done. Now, look, all these guys are heavyweight lawyers with huge reputations. So they're not going to want to screw around with their reputations. If it was a nothing burger, they'd get the hell out of town, right? So if you're impaneling a grand jury, possibly against the president of the United States, it doesn't get any bigger than that. So grand juries, to give you some context here, are powerful investigative tools that allow prosecutors to subpoena documents, put witnesses under oath, and seek indictments if there is evidence of a crime. Legal experts said the decision by Mr. Mueller to impanel a grand jury suggests he believes he will need to subpoena records and take testimony from witnesses. Yummy. Okay, so more consequences that come out of this. Once you start subpoenaing documents, well, that's when you really start to get more heavyweight evidence. Because right now there's a lot of circumstantial evidence, and apparently enough to proceed forward in a significant way here. But then you can get emails, you can get transactions, you can get financial documents. And then once you start putting witnesses up, they start feeling the pressure. And then all of a sudden, some of them are gonna wanna cut deals. Ooh. And you know, Trump keeps saying it's a witch hunt. Of course, that's what he's gonna say to protect himself. But now it's in the hands of a grand jury. So the grand jury will decide. It's not like they're on a warpath. They're 12 random people. And if there's nothing there, then the grand jury will say there's nothing there, and they'll move on. So now we get to find out, and it enters a new phase. And yes, it'll take a lot longer. This means we're definitely going into 2018. I told you these guys are serious guys. They're not just gonna go in there and either wrap up the investigation or say that he's, you know, done something without gathering up a tremendous amount of evidence, because you don't go after the president unless you have a mountain of evidence. So it looks like they've got enough to accumulate more through this very significant process. So now we go to a University of Texas law professor who's an expert in the field. He says, this is yet a further sign that there is a long-term, large-scale series of prosecutions being contemplated and being pursued by the special counsel. Okay, now there's more evidence too, because they brought in some heavy hitters. Earlier in the week, they brought in a guy named Greg Andres, and I was almost did a story about that because it was so significant. But let me just quickly fill you in on who he is. He's a former Justice Department attorney who specializes in corruption and bribery cases, and he joined the investigation. Okay, his expertise is corruption, money laundering, and bribery. I wonder why they brought him in. Well, more from Wall Street Journal, this is very important. Mr. Andres, a former top Justice Department official who also oversaw the criminal division of the US Attorney's Office in Brooklyn, wouldn't leave his private sector job for a low level investigation, Mr. Zeno said. Zeno's another expert on this issue. So He works at Davis Polk. That is one of the top firms in the country. He makes a ton of money, this Andres lawyer. He's not gonna leave that job unless you got a whale that you're trying to catch. You don't go to Andres and go, we're not sure if we've got anything. Why don't you interrupt your life and give up millions of dollars and come work on this, but probably we'll wrap it up soon. No, you bring in this heavy hitter if you think I need the best guy in the world on corruption, bribery, and money laundering. This is not just about, hey, did Russia hack some emails and kind of help Trump? This is, no, there's a much bigger deal between Trump and Russia. And if you're wondering, Mike Flynn, you know how they were investigating him? That's a different grand jury. That's in Virginia. That doesn't have anything new with this. This is about the president.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got
not yet, but it's close. Okay, one last one again from that Thomas Zeno, who's a former federal prosecutor. He says, this is confirmation that this is a very vigorous investigation going on.
Ladies and gentlemen,
no, but almost. All right, now, you can see why Trump is antsy and he's been angling to find a way to get rid of Mueller. Now that there's a grand jury, it would be even more clear obstruction of justice if he tries to fire the guy who just impaneled a grand jury at him. But you know Trump, he'll be furious and he might want to go after him even more now. So if I want to ask you guys a question, if Trump fires Mueller, will Trump be thrown out of office? TYTnetwork.com/holyhell. And it's holy hell because Lindsey Graham famously said that if he tries to fire Mueller, there will be holy hell to pay. Now, that'll be up to the Republicans because they control the House and the Senate. But at this point, this ship has sailed, man. You try to fire the guy who's prosecuting you and has already impaneled a grand jury, and that is super obvious obstruction of justice. Both politically, like obviously he's trying to block the investigation. You know why? They keep speculating, like, I wonder why he's doing it. Is he adverse or bad press? No, there's a much easier explanation. He's trying to block the investigation because he knows what they'll find, because he knows what he already did. And meanwhile, the Russians, now that the sanctions did not get lifted and Trump was forced to sign it because they would have overridden his veto, he's still complaining about it today. He's like, oh, it was a terrible bill, terrible. You signed it. Oh, I can't believe Congress did this. Russia keeps sending threatening messages. Oh, this is a very weak president. It makes him look impotent. That's a curious choice of words. And then they sent this weird jousting video, which no one understands, which I think is some sort of sign to Trump saying, like, you remember what we have on you. It's called kompromat. Okay. So look, it doesn't matter what my speculation is. We got a grand jury. So we're going to find out. Buckle up. And this time, Trump administration, brace for impact. The North remembers. Okay. All right. Now let's go to a much lighter topic. That one had to go first. And later I'll have more serious topics too on how he's doing in office, etc. So Donald Trump has just announced a vacation. Now, before I tell you how long it is, let me quote Donald Trump. This is, of course, before he became president. He said, I would rarely leave the White House because there's so much work to be done. I would not be a president who took vacations. I would not be a president that takes time off. You don't have to take time off. Now, that was easy for that loudmouth to say when he wasn't president and he was criticizing Barack Obama. Okay, now that he is president, nonstop golf. In fact, I'll tell you how much in a second. But he just announced his vacation. You know how long it's going to be? 3 weeks. I would never take time off. Who needs a vacation? It's very important work. Oh, come on, I'm low energy. I'm running out of energy here, right? I got to go take a 3 week vacation. A 3 week vacation? In the 15 years that I've been doing the Young Turks, I've never taken a 3 week vacation because there's a lot of work to be done. And he's the president. Okay, but now let's get to the hypocrisy. Back in the day, this is back in 2012, he tweeted, President Barack Obama's vacation is costing taxpayers millions of dollars. Unbelievable. Okay. So, you know, even before this official 3 week vacation, he was constantly going down to Mar-a-Lago. You know how much those cost? This is an unofficial estimate from the New York Times, sorry, Los Angeles Times, $300,000 per trip just on Secret Service costs. That does not include the Coast Guard that goes to protect him, that does not include the local government's costs. These things add up tremendously. I want to play golf. I'm stressed out. I'm low energy. I got to go play golf. Cost you $300,000. That's not my problem. Okay. Back in the day, here he is in Obama's administration. He said President Obama is about to embark on a 17-day vacation in his quote native Hawaii. He's such a jack ass. Anyway, putting Secret Service away from families on Christmas. Aloha. Okay, what in the middle of the summer when the Secret Service could be with their families? You're making them go away for 3 weeks. How could you, Donald Trump? His hypocrisy knows no bounds. All right, we're not done yet. Then let's go to another criticism that he had of Obama along similar lines, and this is about golf. He said, at this time in his presidency, this is media on the facts. Faith Gates wrote this. At this time, I almost gave it a Trump voice. Anyway, at this time in his presidency, President Barack Obama had only played 11 rounds of golf, while Trump has played 21. So what happened? Well, the golfing is terrible. I can't believe Obama's doing it. Now, again, Faith Gates at Mediaite explains context. Although this is his first official vacation, Trump has spent 43 of his 193 days in office at one of his 17 golf courses. That's not 43 days off out of 193. That's 43 days specifically playing golf. And then there are other days off. Oh, I would never take vacation. I would work so hard. I can't believe Obama's taking time off. I can't believe he's playing golf like this. This is outrageous. Okay, more from this. Back in the day, he said about Obama, can you believe with all the problems and difficulties facing the US, President Obama spent the day playing golf worse than Carter? That was back in 2014. I guess since you've played golf, it's stunning. 43. I haven't played golf 43 times in my life. Okay, 43 times since he's been president. I guess you're way worse than Carter. Way worse. By the way, Carter was in a lot of ways a great president. You should actually read the history on it, or maybe Google it. Peace in the Middle East, the deal between Israel and Egypt. Carter did it. Anyways. Barack Obama played golf yesterday, he goes on to say that back in the day. Now he has a 10-day vacation in Martha's Vineyard. Nice work ethic. Well, if that 10-day vacation indicated a poor work ethic, I guess your 17-day vacation at a minimum is a horrible work ethic. Just keeping it in context. And finally, Trump in his book, Think Like a Billionaire, says, don't take vacations. What's the point? If you're not enjoying your work, you're in the wrong job. Indeed. Indeed. And finally, just a fun little video for you guys. You remember when Donald Trump said this to Hillary Clinton? Perhaps it was a little bit of projection. Watch.
She doesn't have the stamina. I said she doesn't have the stamina. And I don't believe she does have the stamina. To be president of this country, you need tremendous stamina. You have so many different things you have to be able to do. And I don't believe that Hillary has the stamina.
If you're taking a 3 week vacation after having played 43 days of golf and you're only 6 months on the job, there's some chance that you don't have the stamina. You don't have the stamina for the job. I thought you always knew that guy was low energy. Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks. Let me give you a couple of quick tweets here. Amber the Brave says, I don't have much faith in grand juries. They keep letting killer cops go. Why would they actually go after the president? No. It 100% depends on the prosecutor. The reason why the grand juries let the cops go is because the prosecutors don't prosecute. They turn into defense attorneys. We made one of the prosecutor in Missouri our jerk of the year 1 year because instead of doing his job, he impaneled a grand jury and acted as a defense attorney so that he could have an excuse. Oh, the grand jury let him go. So, but in reality, if a prosecutor wants, it's very easy to get a prosecution, an indictment out of a grand jury. So I don't think Mueller's doing this as a cover up. I would be very, very surprised by that. And you don't bring in guys like Andreas and 16 other lawyers he brought in to wrap up a case. You do it to pursue a case. Okay, so, and finally, Jimmy Brandon writes in, four words, Cenk, whisper of a dream.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got.
Not yet. Not yet. Okay. Look, man, I don't know if I made it clear enough in the first segment. A grand jury is a big deal. Okay. Now, let's go to other bad news for Donald Trump. And then at the end of the segment, I'll agree with him on something. What? Okay. Donald Trump, world of trouble. Not only is there a grand jury that was announced today pursuing the case on the Russia investigation. The special counsel has asked for that, but his poll numbers are absolutely disastrous. Now, literally from day one, I predicted that he would get into the 20s. And he started in the high 30s, low 40s. So it's not that bold a prediction. And since then, but people always talk about narratives of comeback, right? There ain't no comeback from Trump. He goes down and then goes further down. Look at all of his businesses, down, then further down, then complete bankruptcy. So we're in the middle of that trajectory downwards. So the new numbers, disastrous, and now we're finally nearing the 20s. This is a Quinnipiac University poll, very respected. 33% approve, 61% disapprove. That could be summarized in one word, disaster. Okay, 33% for a president is awful. At any point in their administration. But 6-7 months in, you're already at 33%. It's almost a 2-to-1 ratio of disapproval to approval. Disaster. And the Republican senators have started to run away from him already. You saw Jeff Flake earlier in the week, his hair on fire, running from the building. All right, how's he doing among Democrats? Because sometimes there's a honeymoon stage and the other party will give you a chance. It's a very American tradition. Actually, a surprising number of Democrats did want to give him a chance in the beginning. That's why his numbers went all the way up to maybe like at their max 44-45%. So how's he doing with Democrats now? No, the jury's in. 2% approval, 96% disapproval. Look, you might think that's obvious. No, I've never seen numbers that large. Not during George W. Bush. Not during Reagan, 2% approval. It almost literally can't get any worse than that. You got 2 points left to go, Trump. How about Republicans? Now, of course, much healthier number with the Republicans, but these are not good numbers either. 76% approval. You might think that's really high, 17% disapproval. Sure, I mean, that's a nice ratio for them, but that number has gone down significantly. Normally, you'll hold easily 85% of your own guys, especially when you're president. And if you're doing well, you'll go up to 95%, etc., right? To be down to 76% and dropping. And I think he lost about 9 points with Republicans recently. So you know, part of the reason he's losing Republican voters are they're finally figuring out what I've been telling them also actually before day one for about 2 years during the primaries and the general election. I said he could win. I said he's a populist. You got to watch out. You got to be careful. But the number one thing about Trump is that he's incompetent. So now the Republicans are going, oh, he couldn't pass the health care repeal of Obamacare. He couldn't pass anything. He's not doing anything right. The other problem is that he's firing somebody every single week. You're not an apprentice anymore. Okay, you're not supposed to fire one person each week. So the incompetence is just now so obvious that even a decent chunk of Republicans are going, yeah, that looks pretty bad. And conservative media has started to turn on him. So Levin, of all people, so talk radio, Breitbart even, and now lately Drudge Report starting to criticize Donald Trump. World of trouble. But most important is independents, because there is now a significant chunk of independents. People always talk about the two ends and how the country is so polarized, but the independents grow every single day. And in the old days, independents sometimes would be Republican light or conservative light. These days, no, independents are truly independent and they can swing in either direction and they definitely do swing elections. So this is the most important number, 34% approve, 60% disapprove. So now that's not the 96% disapproval that Democrats have, but 60% disapproval is really bad. Only 34% among independents means he has lost the middle of the country. So if you think he's competent enough to mount a comeback and actually regain them, have at it, Hoss. How much would you like to bet on that? Because that ain't going to happen. It's only going to go further down. All right, now more bad news. 63% of respondents feel Russia attempted to influence the election. Now you could say, okay, that's fairly clear. And given that both the Obama intelligence agencies, and they're not Obamas and they're not Trumps, they're intelligence agencies overall. But they did have Obama appointees when he was in charge, obviously, and now they have Trump appointees. And both sets of appointees agree. There's no question that Russia meddled in our elections. So that 63% number is actually surprisingly low. I think that's a little bit of like F you to the establishment media that won't stop talking about it. So they're like, nah, whatever, right? But the reality is, even if there was Russian meddling, but there was no deal with Trump, then it's not that big a deal. So that's the most important question. Let's go to that. 58% believe the president has tried to derail or obstruct the investigation into Russian election interference. That's very bad news for the president. I don't know if he knows this, that's illegal. And then one final category from a different poll, Gen Forward survey on millennials. If you thought the general population didn't like him, wait till you get a load of millennials. So every category here, let's put it up, every category of millennials can't stand him. African Americans have him at 10%, 76% disapproval. Asians have him at 67% disapproval. Latinos have them at 68% disapproval. These are horrible. But look, the white vote is what got him the presidency in the first place. And among millennials, they're not buying it. They're not going along with the rest of the white population, especially the evangelical white population that voted for him at an 81% clip. No, among white millennials, 29% approval, 55% disapproval. So, Mr. President, there aren't a lot of people that still like you. And this is not 3 years in, this is not the second term. The jury is, in a matter of speaking, maybe it will be literal soon. But in this case, the jury's already come in 7 months into your presidency. And they pretty much can't stand you. And they're right. Okay, so now let's go to the issues. The wall. This was his big claim to fame, right? So we have another leak now. This is about a conversation that President Trump had with President Enrique Peña Nieto on January 27th. So a little while back, he gets into office. One of the first calls he makes, understandably, is to our neighbor to the south. And remember, he had as his top campaign issue the wall. But when he calls the Mexican president, he doesn't say that. He says, these are transcripts, quote, "It is the least important thing we are talking about." I thought you told your voters that it was the most important thing. You see that? He's got a different story for depending on who he's talking to. And so if you had, look, even if you're MAGA, you know he's a liar. You know he lies every single day. He can't help himself. Even his friends say he's a pathological liar. All right, so that's one aspect of it. Then though, he talks to Nieto and he wants to get him to stop talking about the wall and how he won't pay for it. Now, of course, Mexico, you know, Trump famously said, we're gonna build a wall and we're gonna make Mexico pay for it. Mexico said, no, we're not gonna do that. Of course, I'm not gonna pay for your stupid wall, right? So Trump is trying to talk Nieto out of saying that. So he says, this is again in the transcripts of the phone conversation. So what I would like to recommend is, if we're going to have continued dialogue, we will work out the wall. They're going to say, who's going to pay for the wall, Mr. President? To both of us. And we should both say, we will work it out. It will work out in the formula somehow. As opposed to you saying, we will not pay, and me saying, we will not pay. Why? Why would he agree to that? It's like saying, now look, here's the deal. I'm going to punch you in the face. But if the press asks you, let's both agree to say that I didn't punch you in the face. No deal. Okay. I'm gonna make him pay for the wall. Now say that don't say that you're not paying for it, okay? Why would I say, okay, anyway. So Nieto understandably responds, says, this is what I suggest, Mr. President, he's telling Trump. Let us stop talking about the wall. I have recognized the right of any government to protect its borders as it deems necessary and convenient. But my position has been and will continue to be very firm, saying that Mexico cannot pay for that wall. Now look, I actually think that's the least he can do. If I was him, and I wanted to protect my people and their pride. I mean, their pride's been insulted. And it's not just a matter of their pride, everything has been insulted. He called Mexicans coming in murderers and rapists and criminals. So if I was Nieto, I'd have been 1,000 times tougher on him. But and I would say, yeah, I'm gonna talk about the wall. Yeah, we're gonna do a press conference. You know what's the first thing I'm gonna say? I'm not paying for that goddamn wall. But okay, Nieto at least said, no, no deal. Of course, I'll tell people what our actual position is if they ask. And Trump tries one last time. But you cannot say that to the press. The press is gonna go with that, and I cannot live with that. You cannot say that to the press because I cannot negotiate under those circumstances. Here's what you're missing. And I know Nieto, they're both presidents, and US is an incredibly important trading partner. There's a lot on the line, so there's a ton of pressure on Nieto. I get it. But if I'm in a situation like this, I'd be like, what are you talking about? What negotiations? There's no negotiations. There's no back and forth. You said we paid for the wall. You made that up. We're not gonna pay for it. So if you can't negotiate under those conditions, great. Because we weren't negotiating in the first place, okay? So go ahead and piss off. So Trump is, and look, last thing on this is that he never had a plan. So he told you all these pretty little lies on healthcare. He told you, oh, everybody's gonna be covered. That's universal healthcare coverage. That is a very progressive position. Now he gets in office, are you gonna cover everybody? No, not all the tens of millions that right now are not covered. We're never gonna cover them. And on top of that, we're gonna make sure another 20 to 30 million go uncovered. He said universal coverage, everybody said. Lower premiums, no, it turns out their proposal was higher premiums. And we're gonna cover things like pre-existing condition and your healthcare is going to be better. It turns out, no, the healthcare that would result would cover less things. So over and over again, he told you the wall is the most important thing. It turns out he thinks or tells other people it's the least important thing. And he told you he had a plan. He had a plan for ISIS. Where the hell is that plan? He told you he had a plan to make Mexico pay for the wall. You can see from this conversation, he never had that plan. He thought, I don't know, I'll just make it up now. And then when I get into office, which I probably won't, but if I do, then I'll try to bully a couple of people into doing what I want. That's not how a smart person operates. That you come up with a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, and you figure out what leverage to use to get to that. His idea of leverage is, okay, don't do that, okay? I'm asking you not to do that, because that would be embarrassing to me, okay? Let's not talk about the wall. And then don't say that you're not gonna pay for it. Oh, you don't agree? Oh, shoot, I didn't have a plan B. Total knucklehead. Okay, next. Next is a surprising story where I somewhat agree with him. Okay. So there's a story out about how Donald Trump wants to fire someone else. This time it's one of his generals, it's our Army General John Nicholson. Now, normally people are gonna shake their heads and go, oh, another firing, Jesus Christ, when is this going to end? And yes, it is fair to say that he thinks that the world is still on the show Apprentice and that he is contractually bound to fire one person a week. Having said all that, in this case, I don't agree with necessarily the firing, and I don't agree with his reasons, but I think his overall concern is correct. And so I want to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here. Because look, no matter how much I think he's incompetent, I disagree with him on other issues, every issue you have to look at fairly and see if he's doing the right thing or the wrong thing. And if he's doing the right thing, great, give him credit for it. So he was having a meeting with his defense secretary, James Mattis, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Joseph Dunford. And in the middle of the meeting, he asked whether he should fire the general leading Afghanistan, that's Nicholson. First thing is, he said is, we aren't winning. Now that's, you can say that's overly simplistic, sure. But overall, it's true. I mean, this is what his supporters wanted, right? They knew that he doesn't know the inner details of politics. They probably had no idea how incompetent he is, but that's okay. But you want him to have a gut sense. If you're his supporter and you'd say things like, well, I trust his gut, right? And in this case, he looks at Afghanistan and he says, we aren't winning. That's true. His gut is that it's a mess. That's true. So give him credit for that. And you might think, boy, that's a really low bar. But no, most establishment politicians, both Republicans and Democrats, would have gone in there and be like, okay, the generals tell me it's great. Let's stay another 10 years and see what happens. So there is a difference between politicians. And in this case, I think he's closer to being correct. Now, details on the meeting. The meeting grew stormy, according to Reuters, when Trump said Defense Secretary James Mattis, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Joseph Dunford, and Marine General should consider firing Army General John Nicholson, commander of the US forces in Afghanistan, for not winning the war. Now, there we go again, Trump being a simpleton. It's not that we're not winning in Afghanistan because we have a bad general, and if we had a good general, we would somehow win. It's way more complicated than that. Do you know that this is a poll taken many years ago, actually? They asked Afghanis about 9/11, and over 90% of them had no idea what that was. They don't even know why we're fighting them. No, if they knew it at all, they've forgotten it, but most of them didn't know it in the first place. And when that was an amazing poll we covered back in the day on the Young Turks. And there were some quotes that came along with it. And it'd be like villagers in the middle of a valley in the middle of Afghanistan. They'd be like, look, every once in a while the Russians come and we fight them. Then the Americans came and we fight them. We just assume that people are coming to take our land. So the Afghans are fighting us because we're there. They're not going to get up out of that valley. The random dudes, if you're going to go after Al Qaeda, but Al Qaeda hasn't been in Afghanistan for decades now. We chased them out right in the beginning. We actually had them cornered. We could have killed bin Laden a long time ago. Rumsfeld didn't send in troops. You should read about that. It's an old story from New York Times back in 2004. It's an amazing story. But the bottom line is, now we're fighting guys who don't even know why we're fighting them, and we don't know why we're fighting them. Why are we still in Afghanistan? Is it the Taliban? Is the Taliban still connected to Al Qaeda and ISIS? Are you sure about that? What the hell are we doing there? That's the right question to ask. So his gut's headed in the right direction. His head, as usual, is drifting out there somewhere. Oh, we're not winning. We should be a better general. What's a better general going to do? Send more troops? That didn't work. Send less troops? That didn't work. Here's the correct path. Get out. We're causing a bigger mess by staying in. Anyway, one more quote on this. Reuters says, officials said that Trump argued that the United States should demand a share of Afghanistan's estimated $1 trillion in mineral wealth in exchange for its assistance to the Afghan government. Look, I'm trying to give the guy credit. And if he gets us out of Afghanistan, I don't care how wrong his reasoning was. Great, I'll take it and I'll give him all the credit in the world on it. But no, the right answer is not, now let's steal the natural resources of Afghanistan to pay for the war that we created that I know is a mess and that we're not winning. How is that helping Afghanistan? How is it helping us? But this guy, he really meant it when he said, oh, when we went into Iraq, we should have just taken their oil. Are you insane? Then they're going to say, oh, you didn't come to liberate us, which is the excuse Bush used. You came to rob us. And then the whole country would fight us. And that war would have been even worse than it was as it was. And it was already a debacle and a disaster. So now his brilliant idea for how to make Afghanistan better is, why don't we just take their minerals, just take it from them? They should pay us for us invading them. Just somebody get in there. It's like, and be like, oh, Mr. President, you're so right. I can't believe they're not just letting us take their natural resources when it's their own population stores. I can't believe that's outrageous. Oh, I got an idea for you, Mr. President. Let's just leave. That'll show them. It might work. He's kind of headed in that direction. Just nudge him that way. It is so frustrating how little he knows. Anyway, firing the general in this case isn't going to solve it. But if it leads to us leaving, fantastic. I can't wait to give him credit on that. If he'll just accidentally go in the right direction. Okay, we got to take a break here. When we come back, a fight amongst progressives. Bernie Land has been attacked. I'll explain. All right. Let's go to a couple of tweets here, and then I got a very fun tweet for you at the end. Ansik asked, do you think that Kelly will give him a slight boost and keep him stable for a month or so? And my answer is no. the only chance that things will be stable for the next couple of weeks is because Donald Trump's going on vacation. But he'll even tweet from there, and he'll probably fire people from there. So it's nonstop mess. And so John Kelly, his new chief of staff, seems like a really stable guy. But you know what he's not going to do? He's not going to cover for Trump, because he almost quit over the James Comey firing. And when he doesn't cover for Trump, especially with the grand jury now, Trump will eventually get furious and lash out at John Kelly. There is no fixing this problem. You can't fix dumb. Okay, John Blackman writes in, unfortunately, American presidents have a tried and true method of greatly boosting approval ratings. It involves a lot of death. And unfortunately, that is true normally. And if that's the case, oh boy, buckle up. Because the thing that I keep telling you I'm most worried about is North Korea and a conflict there. Because that is not going to fix his approval numbers. When hundreds of thousands of people die in the first couple of days of that war, he is going to become the worst president we've ever had. James Harding and George W. Bush will breathe a large sigh of relief. But it is going to be brutal. It is going to be terrible if that happens. Let's hope that it doesn't, because that's not gonna fix it for him. Okay, so last tweet for you guys. Jim Carrey apparently is a viewer of the Young Turks, bless his heart, and wanted to get the word out about what's happening tonight. And so, sure, rock and roll. Tonight in West Virginia, real Donald Trump is expected to eat a baby on stage to the delight of his zombie base. Hashtag Walking Dead. And then he has an art piece that he personally did, Jim Carrey did, that he attached to the tweet. Now, I must report to you, because it is my obligation as a news person, that very likely Donald Trump will not eat a baby in West Virginia. That is just Jim Carrey's opinion, man. Okay, anyway, but I appreciate that they sent that in. Okay, so now let's go forward. Let's go to a fight between progressives. Okay. It has begun. The Bernie faction versus establishment Democrats. Now, this is a small warning shot that I believe the establishment is firing in a sense here, okay? So I told you guys a couple of weeks ago, and I marked it down on the calendar when I told the production team, which was 5 weeks ago, that I got it. I know who the establishment is going to support, and that's Kamala Harris. And in that 5 weeks, all we've gotten is more and more evidence of that. In fact, let me go to this story from Mike.com. And boy, does it buttress exactly what I've been telling you guys. Freshman Senator Kamala Harris has recently become the subject of much speculation about a potential 2020 presidential run. Okay, so listen to the next sentence, so this is very important. Several major news outlets have run feature-length profiles of Harris. And top Democratic donors are starting to coalesce around her as their preferred candidate to take on President Donald Trump. First of all, just a little told you. And I did not know that the donors were coalescing around her when I said that they're going to pick Kamala Harris. Why are they going to pick her? Here are the three reasons why, and you'll see immediately that this is the strategy they have already begun. She's going to be very hard to attack. So when you, how would progressives campaign against an establishment candidate? Well, you would go to their record, right? And you would campaign on the issues. That's why Bernie Sanders was so popular, because he's been campaigning on those same issues for the last 40 years. But when you go to campaign on against any of these candidates, whether it's Booker or who knows, you name it, Al Franken or Kirsten Gillibrand, it doesn't matter. They're going to counterattack. Now, how are they going to counterattack? Well, in the case of Kamala Harris, they're going to get to say she's black and she's a woman. So if you attack her, you are by definition racist and sexist. You think that's not coming? First of all, it's already arrived as predicted. And this is just the very, very tip of a giant iceberg to come. And the third thing is, she doesn't have much of a record. She's barely been in office. So they're right now out there going, oh, she's been fighting Trump. Wow, that is the lowest bar there is, right? And I want to be really clear about this. I don't have a position on Kamala Harris yet, because I don't know her well enough. She was attorney general in California. She did one great thing. She fought Obama on a negotiation they were doing with the banks. And her along with Eric Schneiderman in New York got the administration to be tougher on the banks and get more from the banks in a settlement that they did. Now, I don't think they should have done a settlement. I think they should have pursued both civil and criminal charges against the banks and their executives. But overall, that's a big win, and I was very happy about that. So credit where credit is due. She also could have easily prosecuted One West, which was Steve Mnuchin's bank. He's now, of course, the Treasury Secretary. She did not pursue those charges, and Steve Mnuchin later gave her campaign donations for her 2016 run. That was not so good. But look, you got to, on just two issues, you can't judge someone. And unfortunately, in the Senate, she just got there. There's really almost nothing you can judge her based on there. So we got to get into the issues. So I'm not prejudging Senator Harris at all, okay? But I do know that the donors are headed in that direction. There's probably a good reason why. They might know something we don't know. And the mainstream media loves her. Of course, okay, anybody but Bernie. That is definitely part of what they're thinking here. So now, in this case, Andrew Joyce, who wrote this article, went and got a bunch of quotes from progressives, including, by the way, our own Nomiki Konst, a TYT reporter. But Roseanne DeMauro had a good quote. She's the executive director of National Nurses United. They were a very strong union that supported Bernie Sanders, one of the few. They're very progressive, and they fight with Justice Democrats and our revolution on really important issues like Medicare for All. So Roseanne DeMauro said about Kamala Harris, she's one of the people the Democratic Party is putting up in terms of where the progressives live. I don't think there's anything there. So I think what DeMauro is saying there is, like, I get it. There's a bunch of senators that the mainstream media likes and the donors like, but there's no reason yet to be excited about Senator Harris. So there's the one thing that I told you that she did as Attorney General, but what are her proposals? Has she put forward legislation? Has she actively fought for it? What has she done, right? So I think that's a very fair comment from DeMauro. Well, then Mike Policy goes over to Mike.com, goes to Essence Magazine. They find Michael Arsenault, who says, in response to DeMauro, when it comes to where progressives live, which ones are she referring to? The white ones? Boom, immediately it got racial. First of all, that's not remotely true. Over 80% of African Americans support Bernie Sanders. He does better among African Americans than almost any other demographic, and he does great in all the demographics. So you're just making that up. And the establishment criticizes Bernie Sanders as too liberal. They say it's not practical. You can't get those things done. Oh, free college, Medicare for all. You can't get those things done. You're too liberal, you're too progressive. Then at the same time, they turn around a guy who's the most liberal senator. Oh, I don't know that, you know, you might be racist. Look, this is not, look, it's gonna get much worse than this. This is, like I said, it's just a warning shot. But immediately, when you say, hey, has Kamala Harris accomplished as much or fought for as long and as strong progressive positions as Bernie Sanders, says, oh yeah, who's saying that, white people? This is gonna get super ugly. And I'm noting for the record here, we didn't start this. The minute that anyone said, hey, I'm just wondering, what has Senator Harris done? Oh, okay, I guess it's a white black thing now. No, it was never a white black thing until you brought it up. Okay, you remember that picture of Bernie Sanders chained to an African American woman during the civil rights era, where he said, if you're going to arrest her, I'm coming with her, you're gonna have to arrest me too. They question his racial record. Are you insane? You only do that if you want to be disingenuous. And you know, these right wingers, they drive me crazy with what they say is identity politics on the left. In reality, we're not playing any identity politics. What we're saying is, we think black people should have the same rights as white people. That shouldn't be a controversial position. We think women should have the same rights as men. Not controversial. Gay people should have the same rights as straight people. I don't think that's remotely controversial. That isn't identity politics. When you say they should have, white people or straight people or men should have more rights, like straight people should get to marry in with all the rights, and gay people should not get to marry or not have the same rights, you're playing identity politics. But when the establishment Democrats come in and say, nope, you have to support someone either Booker or Harris because they're black, or Gillibrand or Harris because they're women, and based on what? Not on policy, but just on who they are. That actually is identity politics. It's not being played by progressives. Progressives don't like that stuff at all. They want to fight for equality. These people aren't real progressives. The establishment is just asking, where's the money? Where's the money? Where's the money? And how do I get it? And how low and how dirty do I have to go to get it? Okay, by the way, you know, these Bernie bros that they quoted. Now, to be fair, again, Andrew Joyce in this article didn't say Bernie bro, so I'm not putting it on him, but that is a comment that has been used many times. Joyce called it Bernie land. Just want to see the three people he quoted in Bernie land. That'd be Namiki Kantz, Roseanne DeMauro, and Winnie Wong. Three women, so I'm sure the Bernie bro attack is coming next. So we're so far out from 2020, and it's already begun. So you think there's going to be party unity? No, they're never going to unify behind the most popular politician in the country. If all they cared about was winning, it would be a no-brainer. But they're not going to do that because they're more worried about the money. And they never fight hard against Republicans, but they will fight us tooth and nail. I'm telling you right now, this is just the beginning, and it's going to get super ugly. Okay. Let's go to, speaking of super ugly, let's go to Fox News. Okay. So yesterday I told you about the actual Seth Rich conspiracy. Rod Wheeler, who is a correspondent for Fox News, said that another Fox News reporter had fabricated quotes from him in order to make it appear that Seth Rich was not killed in a robbery. He was a staffer for the DNC, but that he was killed perhaps by the DNC or Hillary Clinton's people, which is madness, which is insanity, right? And now Wheeler is saying, yes, Ed Butowski is a rich Republican donor, is the one who concocted this plan. Fox News executed it. Sean Hannity then talked about it. And the president, apparently, if you believe Rod Wheeler's lawsuit, was involved as well. Okay. Now, there's restless employees at Fox News having seen all this. And Fox News did retract the story. So they know now that it was absolutely wrong. Now, remember when CNN got a story slightly wrong about Scaramucci? And it's actually an open dispute whether that story was even wrong. But in order to be inordinately careful, they fired three people immediately. Okay, so has Fox News fired anybody yet, including the person who's charged with fabricating quotes, quotes that were in fact not real? I'm waiting for it. Nope, no one fired yet. Okay, so now CNN has a story from insiders at Fox News. Fox News employees said, people need to start getting canned over the Seth Rich thing. What a mess. I don't know if you realize where you work. Doing Republican conspiracy and propaganda is not something you get fired for at Fox News. That's something you get promoted for. But you know, there's this like kind of an innocent naivete, even including, and maybe most especially including people inside the Fox News building, because they gotta, you know, live with themselves. And there are good folks in there, and I'll explain that in a second. But let me give you more details here. Oliver Darcy writes about this on CNN Money. They don't want to acknowledge that they fucked up, a senior Fox News employee said, explaining that either a top editor didn't see the story before publication, as would be a typical procedure, or a top editor saw the article and approved it. The insider says both situations are really bad. So it's not an oversight. According to Rod Wheeler, an editor did see it and approved it. And I don't know why they treat this as like new news, that Fox News does this generally. There's a whole movie about it called Outfoxed by Brave New Films, and that's from over a decade ago. And there are dozens of examples of memos that people find from Fox News executives and editors telling the reporters how to skew stories. There was a famous one where they said, pretend that Hamas was celebrating Democratic victories after Democrats won the House one year. And then you see Martha McCullum go on air and pretend that Hamas was celebrating the victories when they were doing no such thing. They had no idea what the hell was going on in our elections. They totally fabricated it, and their bosses made them do it at Fox News. So this is not a new event at Fox News. So if you're under any illusion that they're not propaganda for the Republican Party, you should snap out of it. All right, the sources who spoke with CNN said they felt that the significant misstep on the Rich story continues to haunt the network and to put a cloud over their own network. Dude, that cloud was already there, man. Wakey, wakey, just look up. He says, a Fox News on-air personality says, quote, this makes people doubt Fox. I got bad news for you. They were already doubting Fox. Really? That's like news to you that people doubt Fox? You thought you were at a credible news organization that just right down the middle, man. We call it like we see it. Okay. Another employee noted that it forces people to question the network's, this is hilarious, journalistic integrity. Yeah. Yeah, I think it does that. So look, it's not that everybody who works at Fox News is a bad guy or that they're part of this machine. Some are more obviously culpable. If you make up quotes to do this Republican hit piece, you're pretty culpable. If you, like Martha McCullum, just repeat stuff that isn't true because your boss told you, you're pretty culpable. But there are a lot of folks there that are just reporters and they're like, look, it's a paycheck and oftentimes a very large paycheck. They send me somewhere, I go report on it and I'm done with it. And you know, it is super hard in the media to find an outlet that isn't compromised in one way or another. Look, the CNNs and the MSNBCs are part of giant multi-billion dollar corporations that also have interests in front of the US government, whether it's mergers or net neutrality. Are they influenced by their parent corporation's economic interests? Of course, that's how corporations work. Fox News is greatly influenced by the guy who started it, Roger Ailes, and the guy who owns it, Rupert Murdoch. Deeply conservative, deeply Republican. They want to push in that direction. And we have the internal memos to prove it. We have the external stories to prove it. Yes, Al Jazeera owned by Qatar, Russia Today owned by RT. It doesn't mean that every person at CNN, Fox News, Al Jazeera and RT are bad journalists. But you should know the context of these. And almost everyone, apparently outside the people, some people working at Fox News, know that Fox News is a conservative place. They're not playing it right down the middle, which is fine. They, by the way, they got rid of their fair and balanced logo and slogan. So now at least you know, raise your hand and say we do conservative perspective and that's okay. But to pretend otherwise and to talk about your journalistic integrity, it's a little amusing. Now when asked to explain why they have not responded at all to the Seth Rich story, why they haven't fired anyone, they were asked to explain this and here's what Fox News said.
Tide goes in, tide goes out, never a miscommunication. You can't explain that.
Apparently there is no explanation. It was a little forced, but it was still fun. Okay, so that's Fox News. All right, now let's go to another madman that was inside the government. Okay, so the Trump administration has some professionals that work there, old school Republicans, a lot of generals, and then some new school guys, some guys who are more into nationalism, America first, and that are do a lot of fear mongering around immigrants, Mexicans, Muslims, etc. Rich Higgins, I think, fairly qualifies in that category. He was the at the National Security Council. Wow, that's a really important position. In fact, let me tell you more about it. This is from the Atlantic. Rich Higgins, a former Pentagon official who served in the National Security Council's Strategic Planning Office as a director of strategic planning, was let go on July 21st. So the good news is he's fired already. Now I'm going to show you why he's fired. And keep in mind that his job was director for strategic planning. That is a super important security position. And listen to his theories on what's going on in the world. Quote, globalists and Islamists recognize that for their visions to succeed, America both as an ideal and as a national and political identity must be destroyed. So this is a memo he wrote inside the National Security Council. It appears based on the reporting we have, his National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, saw this and was like, son, what are you talking about? Who are these so-called globalists and where's your evidence that they're working with Islamists? So the memo continues. Islamists ally with cultural Marxists because as far back as the 1980s, they properly assessed that the left has a strong chance of reducing Western civilization to its benefit. What? Now these guys are absolutely insane. Back in the 1980s, radical Muslims made a deal with Marxists to undermine Western civilization, including the United States. First of all, what Marxist? Where are the Marxists in power in America? Who are you even referring to? And why would the left make a deal with Islamic radicals who don't believe in any of the civil rights that the left believes in? That would be maniacal. But you see, the thing is, guys like Rich Higgins can't tell the difference between a radical Muslim terrorist and a Muslim. He thinks, well, I already said Muslim, right? No, so a progressive would say, should a Muslim American have the same rights as other Americans? The answer to that is, of course, all Americans are 100% American. Obviously, we should all have the same rights. We believe in equality. If, on the other hand, you said, would you like to work with a Muslim radical who would like to kill gay people, oppress women, and generally bomb our civilization? The answer would be, no, not interested in that. Those are hideous and the exact opposite of progressive positions. But Higgins has got he's got it all figured out of the secret conspiracy. But dude, you're at the National Security Council. Where's your evidence? Where's your evidence? Do I need evidence? Yes, you need evidence. Your job is to protect America. You're not on a blog anymore. Okay, you need to actually do a job where we spend resources in the right direction and we solve things and we prevent terrorist attacks and we protect this country. Where's your evidence? Yeah, shocking that he couldn't find evidence of Marxists and Muslims working together since the 1980s. So what is this all a big part of? He claims it's part of a Maoist insurgency model. What the fuck are you talking about? Maoist insurgency, well, the country is littered with Maoists. If there's one thing I know about America, it's filled to the rim with Maoists. I don't know, man, maybe I'm not running in the right circles, but I've now been in the progressive camp for quite some time. I've never even run into a Maoist, let alone a Maoist insurgent who's like, I got a great idea. We take the Maoists and the Muslim radicals and the Marxists and we launch a conspiracy even though none of us agree with each other. Okay, here's one last one. Because the left is aligned, Higgins explains, because the left is aligned with Islamist organizations at the local, national, and international levels, recognition should be given to the fact that they seamlessly interoperate through coordinated, synchronized, interactive narratives. Okay, where is one example of a coordinated narrative between Muslim radicals and progressives who want the exact opposite thing? Well, if they've got it, for example, if they have a coordinated narrative on LGBT rights, boy, they're doing a great job of hiding it. One side is not at all in favor of LGBT rights, to say the least, and the other side is completely in favor of it. You see how they are, in fact, interconnected through the Maoist insurgency model. So, I guess in a roundabout way, I'm going to give credit to the Trump administration here, because they at least fired this jackass. So the Trump guys put him in, at least McMaster was smart enough to go, hey, listen, nut job, we're trying to do a real work here, okay? We're trying to protect the country. You obviously have no evidence of a so-called Maoist insurgency led by Marxists and Muslims. So here's the new model you should look into, unemployment, because that's what you're gonna need to do because you're fired. Hey, we found a Trump firing, that makes sense. Mission accomplished. Okay, I'm out of time. I've gone too long. All right, guys, let's take a quick break. We got amazing stories for you in the second hour, including, you know, I call them super babies. That's not exactly right. Superhumans have begun. And I'm not kidding. You're going to see I am technically correct otherwise as well. The only question is how long before they take over. All right, that fun conversation when we return.